Check it out. Listen up.
Hello, this is Matthew Bronson, and this is Conversations with Matthew Bronson on KUPR FM 99.9, Placidas, New Mexico, and of course, as always, on ABQLive.tv. Today is our first conversation as part of the PAS, the Placidas Artist Series, and to kick it off, and absolutely a thrill to me, is Katie Mahan. So welcome, and welcome to Placidas and to New Mexico.
Thanks very much.
And we just got done with an amazing concert, but you probably have heard before that you play very well.
Thank you.
And from reading websites, I think they've bantered about the term virtuoso. But I wanted to start off with something a little more casual, kind of AKA Joan Rivers. Who are you wearing tonight?
This dress is actually by Scala. It's just a designer that I like because they do a lot of things with sequins.
Well, lovely. And,
thank you.
You know, in preparation to get to know a little bit more about your music, I watched a lot of your YouTube videos. Uh-huh. And besides, you know, the great variety of music you play, you seem to have a huge wardrobe. You must love gowns.
Well, you know, I think the thing is that as a woman, if you appear in the same gown, for instance, if you play with an orchestra and you have a 2 or 3 day performance of the same concerto, you know, if you wear the same gown, people get really bored. You know, if you're a guy, you can get away with one tux. But for a woman, it's definitely different because people remember what you wore last time. I mean, I remember once I played in Colorado Springs and I heard some ladies before the concert, and they didn't realize that I was there, and they said, you know, are you going to come to this concert? That was the girl that wore the dress, the pink dress that had the low back, and they probably didn't have any idea what I played, but they remembered the dress.
There you go. Yeah, well, I guess, you know, like Itzhak Perlman, it's easy for him to decide, what am I going to wear today?
Right.
So when you go on tour, do you say, I'm taking this one, this one, and this one?
I mean, normally I take 2 dresses, and actually I try always to take a long-sleeved one because I get very cold, and so especially I perform a lot in Europe, probably more than half the time there, and it gets chilly, so I try to take dresses that look good and are different but also keep me warm.
And do you carry one on the plane? Like I've heard brides who are getting married from their hometown, they won't check their wedding gown because you can't have a wedding without a gown.
To be honest, no. And I mean, it would be a good idea because a couple times, for instance, last year I played in Bremen in Germany, and my suitcase never arrived during the course of my trip. So I had to play the concert the day that I arrived. So, and being that it was a Sunday, everything in Germany was closed, so I couldn't buy clothes. So I played it in my black pants. But it taught me that, you know, it's always important that what I travel in could hypothetically work on stage, so I never travel in jeans.
There you go. And kind of along those lines, before we get to all of the music stuff, are you prohibited by who? I don't know if you're under contract with someone or just a manager or a mother. Someone says, we don't want you playing racquetball. You know, like a lot of sports stars aren't allowed to do skydiving.
Yeah.
Are there activities that, at least by your own choice or contractually, you're not allowed to do?
I mean, just a matter of being responsible for this profession, I don't do winter sports or anything like that. I mean, because if I fell and broke something, then I'm out 6 weeks at least. And of course, not only are you out the time that you're in a cast, but then your muscles become very weak. So, I mean, it would be a really long time to be able to play properly. So, I mean, like I said, just a matter of being responsible for my profession.
Right. It's self-imposed.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't know if it's an old joke or whatever, or a cliche from when Lloyd's of London was very famous. Are your hands in the shirt? Like, I think there was some model who had $1 million legs.
Yeah.
Million-dollar hands.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of pianists do, actually, but mine are not insured at this point.
All right, well, let's, you know, people who are familiar with you know this information, so this is for all the people who don't.
Okay.
So let's talk about your musical journey.
I began the piano at the age of 4, and I started actually because I heard a concert, and it inspired me so much that I told my mom that I wanted to be a a concert pianist, and so I was 4 at the time, and I actually started piano the next day, and it's always been my greatest passion. I mean, it's never been work, even though, I mean, from the time I was 6, I practiced at least 6 hours a day. When I was in kindergarten, I would go in the morning, and then I'd have lunch with my mom, and then I would practice from 1 until dinner time. So,
isn't that unusual? Because, like, little girls want to be fairy princesses, and little boys want to be firemen or Superman.
Well, I wanted to be a famous pianist, and so that was my goal. And, you know, my mom explained to me that, you know, to do that, you have to work hard. And I don't know, I'm one of those people that it doesn't bother me to work for hours and hours.
Well, they
and hours
say if you do what you love, you'll never work a day
exactly,
in your life.
Exactly, and I feel that.
And do you have a musical family?
My mom is a pianist, and she actually taught me until I was 18. And so I think I got my musical abilities, I'm sure, from her.
And was she, or is she still a performing pianist?
She didn't ever do a lot of solo performing. When I was younger, we did a lot of duo piano, actually. And so from the time I was 6, we gave duo piano recitals. So it was a lot of fun. But, I mean, her profession is to teach.
Well, every parent thinks their child is special. Have you had a conversation with your mother as to when she knew that you were not just going to be a good piano player, you were going to be a concert pianist?
I think she pretty much realized that probably when I was about 5, because, I mean, I progressed very quickly at the beginning, and I worked very hard, and, you know, it's a good combination. It's the one thing to have talent, but if you don't work at it, it's not going to do anything for you. Right. And, you know, I think really she did. She knew that that was what I would do.
Because there, I'm thinking of like high school, where there were some people who worked really hard and did really well, and there were some people who didn't work so hard and did okay, but they ended up being very successful because right. They were just plain smarter.
Yeah.
The other ones were, you know, got straight A's because they just were driven. You had the combination of both being.
Well, I mean,
talented.
Music is like sports, and it's not something that you can slack off with. I mean, if you, for instance, if you want to be a football player, if you want to be in the NFL, you better eat, drink, and sleep football. Otherwise, you're not going to get there. And it's the same. It's the same thing with music. I mean, it's an extremely competitive field, and I mean, in the first place, you have to work hard to put yourself in the position where you will get some lucky breaks, and it's no guarantee that you're going to get them. But if you don't put the work in, you definitely won't get them.
Well, along those lines, and this is Matthew Bronson, Conversations with Matthew Bronson on KUPR 99.9 FM, and we're speaking with concert pianist Katie Mahan, who just finished an amazing concert at the PAS Series here in Placitas. You said there was a lot of competition. I did not realize that the concert piano world was vicious.
Oh, it's extremely vicious, actually.
Like ballet and, you know, prima ballerinas and all that?
Yes, of course. And let's face it, classical music is for a very small percentage of the population. And therefore, there's a very small number of people who are able to make it, really make a living doing it. And, I mean, it's not something mass where, you know, where there's a lot of opportunities for a lot of people to do the same thing, unfortunately.
Right. Well, that could change at one time.
We hope.
And at least with, you know, the multimedia and internet and all the different ways you can get exposed now that you couldn't 20 years ago.
Right.
So
yeah, it's true.
So along the lines of being a performer, you know, I pay a lot of attention to different media types. And, you know, someone who is, say, a actor, and they're on a soap opera or some kind of sitcom, they have a very early call and they work all day, as contrasted to, say, a comedian, who a lot of them remark on the fact, I work an hour a day. I come here, I do my thing, and I go home.
Yeah.
Do you have a long day or a short day, you know, as a concert pianist?
I mean, I practice every day, and so I mean, when I'm on the road, I practice probably 3 to 4 hours a day, even on concert day. So, you know, 3 to 4 hours of practicing, and then, I don't know, half an hour to an hour of getting dressed, and then the concert, and then CD signing, and sometimes interviews, and then always dinner with sponsors, presenters, these kind of things. Certainly. So, yeah, it adds up.
And how many concerts a year do you typically give?
Oh, it depends entirely on the year. Probably right now I do about 35 or so.
Okay, so that gives you some free time.
Yes.
So when you do we had heard earlier when you were introduced that you had just come from a concert series like in Germany.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so when you go on the road, is that for a certain period of time? Or do you know, like, I'm going to take 3 months and I'm going on the road? Or do
it
you
varies.
Do
it? It varies. I mean, for instance, I just came home from Europe. I was there 3 weeks, and this summer I was there close to 3 months. And so, I mean, not the summer. It began spring and into summer. And,
right.
You know, so it depends. So in other times, I fly over for the concert, play it that morning, and fly out the next day. So, you know, it depends on what other concerts I have around it, and, you know.
You didn't stay for a good Wiener Schnitzel, or?
I always love to stay for a good Wiener Schnitzel. So.
Who can blame you?
That's right.
Other than your mother, were there any particular mentors or significant people that helped you succeed?
Yeah, I mean, my main mentor was Pascal Roger. He's a fantastic French pianist, and he was my mentor for more than three years, and I studied pretty much the complete works of Debussy with him because that was his specialty.
How did you hook up with him?
It was funny. Actually, my piano tuner works for the Colorado Symphony, and Pascal came and played and introduced, and my piano tuner introduced me, and, you know, I told Pascal how much I loved French impressionistic music, and so I gave him a CD, and some months later he wrote and said, you know, your CD is fantastic, you know, if you still would like to play for me, you know, please do. And
come
so
up.
It began like that, and, you know, and he was fantastic not only for lessons, but also we would often have great conversations about the music and how it tied into French culture and French history and the language and everything. And I think it's important to realize with every piece of music that it's not just a piece of music. You know, it's a reflection of its time and its place and life in general. And so I learned a lot from him.
Super. And as part of your musical journey, you know, learning to play, is part of that learning different languages? You know, like opera singers usually will learn French and German and Italian.
Not really. It should be. I studied French when I was in high school and college, actually. And, I mean, there's a lot of similarities between the music and the language as far as patterns. I mean, the way you, for instance, in the French language, the way you drop the end of most words, you know, it's a similarity to the way you would do phrasing in music. But, I mean, actually, I spend most of my time in Germany now, so I've learned German poorly and with bad grammar, but, you know. At the same time.
You can order a Wiener Schnitzel.
Exactly.
Well, starting at such a young age, you know, you went through physical changes. I mean, your hands got bigger, your legs got longer. Maybe you can actually touch the pedals now. Or...
Well, you know, I was a tall little girl, actually. And I think I always could reach the pedal ever since I started.
But your spread with your hands had to have changed.
Yeah.
So did that affect the way you learn? Because I remember, I mean, I played trombone from like third grade through high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time I must have grown when I was going for a long slide note, the slide actually came off.
Uh-huh.
And that had never happened to me before.
And
it was like, that kind of freaked me out. So as you, were you limited in some of the things you could play because you just didn't have the reach?
No, not really. I mean, I started the Liszt Sonata when I was 8. And... you know, I still had child's hands at that point, obviously, but, you know, you work around it. I mean, there are people who have small hands. I mean, for instance, Alicia de la Rocha, you know, the wonderful Spanish pianist, I think she was probably 4'5", maybe,
okay.
You know, and, I mean, she had these tiny little hands, and, I mean, she could do amazing things, but, you know, also when I was young, I was absolutely obsessed with Bach, and so I played Bach for almost nothing but Bach for about 5 years, and Bach doesn't require such a big... you know, a big span, and so actually for small hands, for me, it was totally comfortable, and
right.
I learned to love the romantic repertoire, outside of the Liszt Sonata. That was one piece I loved, but I learned to love the romantic repertoire later, and by that point, my hands were fully grown, I guess.
So, sure.
Yeah.
Is there a piece that you have been practicing or have tried to play that is kind of held out there that I really want to play this, but I just haven't gotten that down yet? there's one, I don't want to say too hard, but just you haven't felt good enough about it that you would perform it?
Well, I used to feel that way about Rachmaninoff Third Concerto. It was a piece I always loved, but I mastered it, and I did accomplish it, and I mean, I play it now, you know, with some regularity, and so that was one piece. A piece, I suppose, that I still have not accomplished is Prokofiev's Second Concerto. I think it's fantastic, and it's probably the most difficult piece I ever tried in my life, and, you know, I'm not a Prokofiev player exactly. I love his music, but
what is it about it that makes it complex or a challenge? Is it the
sheer technique and the number of notes and the playing? It's just horribly difficult, you know, from a technical and a mental standpoint. I mean, right. For me, that's definitely the hardest piece.
And for those of you who were not here today to see Katie Mahon play, you do not use sheet music.
No.
That, I don't want to say it's not typical, but I see some concert pianists use music. Is that just you? You don't need to?
I mean, the basic rule is that as a solo pianist, you don't use sheet music. But also, I was a bad reader when I was a kid, and I was a good memorizer. So ever since I began playing the piano, I memorized everything because I was good at it, and mm-hmm. as opposed to the reading, which I was not good at. So.
Any idea of how many pieces you have in your mental hard drive?
I have no idea.
Have you ever gone halfway through and then accidentally started playing a different piece?
No.
Or it's you've never had, you're too young to have a senior moment, but ever just freeze? It's like, I don't know what's next?
Well, of course. I think everybody has memory slips at some point. I mean, it's part of living and growing in this profession.
I couldn't tell from where I was sitting, but it appeared that perhaps your eyes were closed. Mm-hmm. Do you play with your eyes closed?
Yes, often, actually. Because, in a way, it helps me to feel the music better. And I have, for every single piece I play, I have a very vivid image in my mind. And, for instance, when I play Beethoven, I see the places I've been in Germany, because I think you can't take Germany out of Beethoven. You know, there's something, or Austria. I mean, it's... The music is so, in a way, is so incredibly depictive of that country and the ways and everything. And so when I'm playing music and when I'm listening to it and thinking of it, I have an image of somewhere I've been and something.
So you're not actually seeing the music in your mind.
No.
That's just kind of muscle memory. It just kind of flows through your hands and you're thinking about what gown you're going to buy next.
Not quite. No. No, I think, like I said, I think for... Debussy is another example. I mean, every one of his pieces has a very specific theme, a very specific story. And so, I mean, one of the pieces that I play today, the pagode, you know, mm-hmm. I see a pagoda and I imagine what I've seen of Japan, because in order to make the music really come to life, I have to believe it myself. I have to be able to see it in my own mind's eye. I mean, I've always had a very vivid imagination with my music, and I continue to have that. So every time I play, I don't see something else that's not related. I see what really the music is inspiring in my mind.
Well, and when you speak professionally with other peers, mm-hmm. is that typical that of the way they perform?
Yes and no. I mean, some people do, some people don't. It depends partially on your character and partially on how you were taught. You know, some
so you're literally performing as opposed to playing?
Yeah, possibly.
Okay. When you're not practicing mm-hmm. or performing, are there other types of music that you play?
Not really. I mean, to be honest, I love classical music so much I couldn't live without it. And so if I'm not playing that, I listen to it. You know, I love symphonic music. I really adore, I mean, any given day, my favorite things to listen to are Mozart's Requiem or Beethoven's mm-hmm. Fifth Symphony. I mean, I really love this music.
So if you have an iPod or something similar, you don't have Jimi Hendrix or Elton John
not very
or someone.
Often, no.
No, you don't. That's not on.
No, it's very close-minded. But you know, like I said, I really love this music, and I've always loved it. So, I mean, most of the time I would listen to symphonic music.
Then the next question probably doesn't make any sense, but I'll ask it anyway.
Okay.
Pavarotti, when he, I guess, was truly accomplished, and I don't know if he got bored or whatever, but he did some concerts with like Bono from U2.
Right,
and
right.
Would you ever consider something like
yes,
that?
Yes, of course, because I think that what Pavarotti did is bring in audiences that were not normal classical music audiences, and I think it's the greatest thing that you can do because it is, classical music is, as we said before, you know, it's a very small audience, and to me that's a tragedy because it's such a beautiful thing, and a lot of people don't like it because they don't know anything about it and they have no exposure to it. And what Pavarotti did, he was a real ambassador for classical music, and Long Long now does the same thing, and I think it's the greatest thing you can do. So I mean, if I have that opportunity to work with some pop star or something, you know, I would love to do it because you
but
reach
you don't
out
know
to
any
new
of
audiences. No, but I could learn. So
there's no one that you would say, yeah, I want to play the piano part in the Hungarian Bohemian Rhapsody from Cream.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to replace Freddie Mercury as the piano player.
I don't know. I mean, like I said, it would depend on the circumstance, but I would certainly be open to it.
Okay. How did you come to be part of the PAS series here in Placidas, New Mexico?
I think my agent contacted them, so that's a good question.
Yeah. Are you on route from someplace to someplace, or
well, I just came back from Switzerland actually, and
with a layover in New Mexico.
Exactly, yeah. And no, actually, then I have a couple of weeks at home, and then I go back east again and play in the Baltimore area.
And where is home?
Right now, home is Denver.
Okay, so you're a neighbor.
Yes, I am a neighbor.
Okay. Do you have a concert series plan or some future performances that we can let people know about?
In the area?
No, what's going to happen the next 4 months of your life?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I go back east. I play in the area of Baltimore and Washington, and then I head back to Germany, and back to Germany and more Germany.
Just in time for winter.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, do you have a website? And what is that website?
Okay, yeah, my website is www.katiemahan.com.
Okay, so that's KATIEMAHAN.
KATIEMAHAN.
Didn't mean to cheat you out of an E, so KATIE. And Facebook also?
Yes.
Spelled probably the same as?
I believe it's the same way.
Okay. Now, I know you had a CD signing here tonight, and this is at the PAS, the Placidas Artist Series concert. In beautiful Placidas, New Mexico, and this is a conversation with Matthew Bronson on KUPR 99.9 FM, as well as abqlive.tv, and I'm speaking with Katie, with an E, Mahan. Other CDs that you have available for sale?
Yes, I have, I believe, 8 CDs available, and they can all be purchased from my website.
And do you do it by composer, or by, like, do you have a Christmas CD yet?
You know, I don't have a Christmas CD. That would be a nice thing to do, but I don't have one. I have a couple of Debussy CDs. I have a CD of Liszt and Chopin. I have a CD of Brahms, Prokofiev, and Rachmaninoff. I have a Mozart CD, and I have a couple of others, so.
And do you always or mostly perform solo, or do you play with an orchestra?
I also play concertos with orchestra. That's actually my very favorite thing.
So that answers my other question, which you prefer.
I mean, I like both. I love to play solo because you have a freedom to do. I mean, you have more freedom. And it's wonderful. I like to choose my own programs, and, you know, it's great. But I think there's something so special about performing a concerto with orchestra simply because the repertoire is so unbelievably beautiful.
Right.
And to be able to play, you know, and hear the orchestral colors, and, you know, it's a real one of the reasons why I love this profession.
Certainly. Yeah. Is there some place that you, for whatever reason, don't want to perform?
Not really. I mean, I love to travel, and, you know, within reason, I think I enjoy most everywhere. I mean, Europe is my very favorite place to perform.
Would you ever consider, say, a Saudi prince says, you know, we're having a few thousand of our closest relatives for my grandniece's wedding, and we'd like you to perform, or Bill Gates says, we're having our corporate or our annual meeting with 40,000 people, yeah, and we'd like you to be part of the, I guess, entertainment. Would you consider something like that for $2 or $3 million? Or?
Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, I would do it if, I mean, the only thing I wouldn't do it for is if it was for a cause that I was opposed to, you know, or for an individual who had beliefs that I couldn't identify with, you know, but otherwise, yeah.
Well, speaking of a cause, there is the Katie Mann Foundation.
Right.
And when did that start, and what is it all about?
That actually started last year, and I did it because I had a recording project in Germany, and I had looked for about a year for sponsors, and I found a sponsor, and this person who, his company sponsored me, I found out subsequently that he was paralyzed, and you know, I was very touched by the fact that his company sponsored me, and I, you know, I said, well, how can I give, what can I do to give back? And he wanted me to do a benefit concert for spinal research, and so, I mean, it was a little bit, it's better that I could do it from my own foundation than run it through another foundation.
Certainly.
And so after some work, we set this up, and I did a concert for that, and we raised nearly
$45,000
for spinal research. And, you know, it's something I always wanted to do anyway, because I think, I mean, I feel very blessed to be a musician. I love what I do, and I've had a great life. And I think music is a great tool to use to help people and to help causes.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's something I, of course, want to do more of.
And can people get to the foundation through your website or through your Facebook page?
Yeah, through my website, yeah. There's a link, there's a page on the link, there's a link on the link page.
Okay.
So.
Super. Any advice that you would give to current musicians who are starting out, who have been it for a while, but they just haven't broken in, or other than practice, practice, practice?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is never give up. I mean, all the way along the way, you'll have people say you can't do it, and the most important thing is to believe in yourself and work hard. And if you do believe in yourself and if you do work hard enough, you know, you have a great chance of being able to accomplish what you want. But if you give up and if you give in to people telling you what you can't do, then you'll never make it.
That's true. Such wisdom from someone so young. All right, well, kind of wrapping up here, is there anything that you would like to share with the KUPR audience, or the, I guess, the Albuquerque part of New Mexico?
I think what's important is that people continue to support classical music, both financially and with their time. You know, I think it's so important to attend concerts, and because it's such an incredible art form. I mean, you can't, it's such a wonderful part of life, and it needs to be supported by people just attending concerts and having the opportunity to experience really what it's all about, because listening to a recording, you know, it's wonderful, but it's not the same thing. You know, I think it's you have to go and see somebody live and hear them, and, you know,
and see them.
It enhances life. I think really music does enhance life.
I mean, certainly, I mean, I couldn't agree more. You know, growing up in a family that classical music was part of our family, as well as it was in the Washington, D.C. area, so we had a lot of opportunity to go out, and my parents were nice enough or smart enough to introduce the whole family to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you said, listening to the radio or the record is different than, and as I said, I had watched a lot of your YouTubes, but then to actually see you perform, it's a whole different level.
Yeah, it is, and I think it's always that way, and I think it's especially important for parents who have children, because in this day and age, you know, there's hardly any music education anymore in schools, and to me that's tragic. I mean, I think music is as important as math, and I mean, you know,
a lot of
because
similarities between
and I mean, it's the one thing that develops both sides of the brain at the same time, and you know, I think it's so important for kids to be able to have exposure to music so that they can decide for themselves whether or not they like classical music, rather than having a preconceived idea of what it's about. And so, you know, I think no matter what happens, you know, it's so important to expose kids to
but
this.
But saying, I don't like classical music is like saying, I don't like vegetables. There's such a range of vegetables.
That's right. That's
I mean, nobody likes broccoli. But
I like broccoli.
I do too. But I've been thinking of one of the former presidents.
Right.
And maybe it's a generational thing. I might have enjoyed or gotten into classical music more because when I was growing up, the cartoons all had classical music behind it.
Right.
And we didn't realize we were learning classical
right.
music. We, you know, we were learning Bugs Bunny or whatever.
Right.
And what is put out there as children's entertainment now.
Is different.
With a little E, entertainment.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what music Barney played or
right.
that kind of stuff.
Right.
But I know most parents found it annoying.
Yeah.
But, well, on that intellectual note, I will end this and once again remind you, this is KUPR FM 99.9. You'd be surprised that I actually speak for a living in Placitas, New Mexico. And this has been Conversations with Matthew Bronson, and have had the thrill to speak to Katie with an E Mahan, who just performed as a concert pianist at the Placitas Artist Series. If you have not been here, even though it's been going on for 24 or 29 years, don't let that embarrass you. Come on out to the next concert, which I believe is in November. So again, for my conversation with Matthew Bronson, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you taking the time.
Get ready for Matthew Bronson.